Marley was dead to begin with.
Good riddance to Marley, and good riddance to all rich people, because after the meager $600 that we're getting from this coronavirus package, rich people clearly don't know how us middle class and poor people need how much we really need during this fucking pandemic. So I'm kind of angry right now.
During the holiday period, yes. Yeah, no, and rightfully so.
And where are these ghosts to haunt them so that way they can spread some fucking Christmas cheer?
Right? Seriously.
Yeah, so that's what this podcast is going to be about. Like, I'm going to be bemoaning the rich. Clearly, Charles Dickens knew what was up because, in the 1900s, he was just like, yo, fuck rich people.
Yeah, 1843 is when this novella came out. So
even older
than that. Things have not changed.
No, things have not changed at all. I'm clearly very impassioned right now.
It's Christmas time, guys. And what better way to discuss not only Christmas, but some current events than to relook at probably the most well-known classic Christmas story, A Christmas Carol. We're going to do something a little different today. Instead of just going one by one comparison, we're just going to talk about a bunch of different versions because there's so many.
There's so many.
A Christmas Carol, and see which ones we think are our favorite, which one got the story done right, and which one we just overall enjoyed. So let's do it. I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About unoriginality. Happy holidays, our, you know, disgruntled feelings towards our government, in quotation marks. How are you?
I am good. I'm a little stressed, right? This is a full disclosure, everyone. We are recording in the middle of a work day, so we're so bad.
It's daylight.
There is daylight, right? So that's why you could probably sense I have a little more energy instead of our usual night, because by the time we're recording at night, I'm usually a little less, I have less energy.
Yeah.
Usually I'll get riled up, but today I'm already riled up because, you know, seeing what's in this stimulus package really grinds my gears, you know?
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm a little stressed out because, you know, cooking dinner for, you know, the family that I'm going to have over for Christmas Eve. And but then I'm looking forward to Christmas Day and just not doing anything and like using coronavirus as the perfect excuse to do nothing.
Yes. Oh, that's the one good thing out of it.
Yeah.
It's the perfect excuse, you know, COVID.
Yeah, it's just like, I can't go anywhere, I'm sorry, like
anything. Yeah,
and when you host, you can only have a max, right? It's just like, sorry, I've hit my quota, I can't have you over.
Yeah
Sorry, grandma. Is that it?
And that is Eddie Z, our producer.
Hi everyone,
happy holidays, Eddie Z.
Happy holidays.
Yeah, one of my favorite songs, because it's all inclusive, you know?
Yep.
So before we begin, though, just want to remind you all, this is the season of giving. So how about you give us some good reviews on Apple iTunes? Go. It'll be the best gift you can give Nicole and I.
Yes.
Nicole and me. Whatever it is.
Yes, if you enjoy this podcast, give us the gift of a 5-star review on Apple
and leave
podcast.
Us an actual review, because we might read it. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, we might share it on our social media. What is our social media, Nicole?
Well, on Instagram, we're at Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. You can hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/remakesreboots/revivals. We are also on Twitter at Remakes Podcast.
Nope, that's right. Yeah, okay. You got it. Yay!
Or you could just hit us an email, remakesreboots/revivals@gmail.com.
Yes. And also, we have some stuff planned out for 2021, including a possible hotline that you guys can call in and leave us messages, deranged, happy, whatever they may be. We might play them on air.
All right. So let's get into the bah humbugness of it all.
And I'm always in the bah humbugness of the holidays.
Yeah.
Mostly because of media. I love the holidays, but it's media around the holidays that I'm usually very bah humbug about.
I am about most other holidays. Except Christmas.
That's so weird. Complete opposites.
That's just because I love Christmas and I love what the meaning of Christmas is, which some versions of this novella have actually done a really good job at emphasizing, some haven't.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, let's get down to it.
Okay. Well, so a little tiny bit of history, just because it's fun to, in order to understand, you know, why the story was created. The original title of this novella, it's a very short book, you know, which is why it's a novella, is A Christmas Carol in Prose Being a Ghost Story of Christmas. That is the title of the book.
That's a full title?
Mm-hmm.
A Christmas Carol in Prose Being mm-hmm. a Story of Ghosts of Christmas?
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because if you think about it, you know, what is a Christmas Carol? A carol is mm-hmm. a song.
Yes, that always confused the hell out of me.
Right? So that's why it's like it makes more sense when you know the whole title, A Christmas Carol in Prose. Because also, yeah. you know, during, like I said, he wrote this in 1843. During this time, the British were reevaluating kind of Christmas traditions and coming up with new ones. This is when people started putting Christmas trees in their houses.
Oh, okay.
And carols were something from, like, say, you know, the 17th century. They were doing in the 1600s, and then they got out of favor. They were coming back in favor during this time.
The carols fell out of favor at one point?
Mm-hmm.
That's so lovely. What a time to be alive.
Oh, I didn't have to no, to what Christmas an music. Awful time. Like, you know, the 1700s just must have been terrible and bland during December.
I don't know. If you ask me, Hamilton seemed to capture the spirit of the 1700s.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Totally 1700s? Accurately. Yeah, 1700s. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Late 1700s.
Late 17, yeah.
But yeah, and you know, Charles Dickens, I think he's a very atmospheric writer. You know, like when you think of Dickens, you almost can like see visuals in your head. And he's done a really good job. As a writer, he's a very good author in terms of setting the scene. So actually the way he portrays Christmas, I think, arguably in this novella, has actually helped people kind of get a sense of Christmas traditions that we've actually taken after, if that makes sense, right?
Like a goose for dinner.
Yeah. Like the idea of a Christmas feast and stuff. Like a lot of that he wrote in this book has inspired our Christmas traditions. And this book, you know, it has mm-hmm. staying power.
Do you think people still read the book, though? Have you read the book? I've never read the book.
I read the book when I was younger, yes.
I don't think I've read any Charles Dickens, to be honest.
Well, Charles Dickens writes, you know, he's a very detailed writer. A lot of people have complained about that. Is like I said, he sets the scenes perfectly. So when you read it, it's like a lot of friggin' detail and people don't like that. Mm. But this is one of his shortest books, and it's his novella, and it's actually a really good read.
Got it.
Okay. It's because he doesn't do his usual shtick. But he also, because, you know, back in the day, they weren't posting it. They weren't publishing books. It was like series that were in the newspaper. And he did this around Christmas time and people were immediately hooked. This was immediately loved by the public.
Do you think it was loved by the public? Because I'm assuming the first few, you know, episodes or issues, right? Mm-hmm. Is all about like tormenting this rich man. And people are just like, yeah, fuck rich people. I'm sorry. I'm like,
it could really be. Angry. Yeah.
This guy. And then they get all disappointed with the end. He changes his ways. It's like, well, that's not going to happen in real life.
I think people weren't as disillusioned back then. So, no.
I don't know. I feel like throughout the course of human history, we have been nothing but disillusioned.
It's becoming more and more so, I think. But I think, I don't know. I really do wonder what it was. Like, I wish I could put myself in the mind of a person why they liked it so much. But
I wonder if it was well reviewed.
It was, yeah, no,
oh,
people,
really?
Yeah, okay. The public and critics both adored it. Charles Dickens himself was actually very proud of it. He loved to read it out loud. That was like he would go on tour and then he would do public readings of it and stuff. He was very proud of this work.
Cute.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny? I actually thought A Christmas Carol was a play, not a book. Because growing up, like, I would go to, my parents would take me usually, instead of seeing the Rockettes, we would go to see A Christmas Carol, usually like either Madison Square Garden or somewhere off Broadway. And stuff.
Oh, really?
That was always my thing. And I always was under the assumption, like, you know, Shakespeare plays. Like, I thought it was always a Charles Dickens play.
That's, wow. Yeah. No, never. Mm-hmm. I never had a Christmas tradition of going to the theater. So that's really nice.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know. I know the story, like, the back of it's fine. Like, I have, you know, some productions I remember more distinctly than others. You know?
Yeah. But, so this, the book, they say that it really had an impact on mid-Victorian ideas of Christmas and in the future. Christmases that were yet to come, no pun intended, like family gatherings, seasonal foods, drinks, you know, a festive generosity of spirit are very much in play in this book. And that is something that we still consider to be like we still have during the Christmas spirit, during Christmas time.
Right. So. I mean, Goose is the one that comes to mind. Like, it's a very Dickensian Christmas tradition.
Okay. Is that a
have
real
you ever
word?
Had goose?
I think so, yeah. I have not had goose. I had duck once in my life and I did not enjoy it.
Oh, duck is delicious. I've never had goose. I was very much considering trying to make goose this year for the first time. I wanted have a very, I wanted to have a very Charles Dickens like Christmas.
Uh-huh.
However, I found out that goose comes out very reddish and pink because it's like, you know, because of the way it's built out, like it's a lot of muscle. And I just know for a fact, my mom, who is Hispanic, and if you know this about Hispanics, they like their food really done well.
Yeah, yeah.
She would not eat it.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm not going to waste my time.
Probably a good call. Yeah. Actually, for side note, this is the first year that we made turkey.
And how'd that come out?
That it was delicious. Oh my God. I loved it. My girlfriend didn't want to eat meat for like 2 weeks after that, but I loved it. I thought it was really nice. But this is an interesting part of Christmas Carol. Did actually somebody publish an illicit copy of his story and Charles Dickens sued them?
Wait,
they published it without his consent or without any legalities about it. And, you know, in the true Christmas spirit and not to be like greedy or anything, he totally sued their asses.
Mm-hmm. But did they make money?
Well, they did make money off of it.
Oh, there you go. I say it's just like, you go.
And then
Charles
he lost money because he, you know, pursued suing them and stuff. But the publishers who did it actually, they went bankrupt because of him suing them. So that's I don't know. That's real it's a little ironic.
I wonder if the ghost came to haunt him after that.
Yeah. But so everybody knows the story. Ebenezer Scrooge, I mean, the term Scrooge and Grinch, which we've covered 2 years ago around Christmas time, these are two terms that are synonymous with the holiday time and also with people who are not part of the holiday spirit. Don't be such a Scrooge, don't be such a Grinch, right?
It's also synonymous with a duck who swims in coin.
What?
Scrooge McDuck.
Oh, the Mickey one, okay.
Yeah.
That did not process right away. And also, bah humbug. That's something that Ebenezer Scrooge says, you know, like this is part of our pop culture complexicon, so we don't really need to talk too much about the story. Let's just immediately get into how much this piece has been adapted into everything. It's been back in the day, they used to always perform it on the radio, you know, when people didn't have like televisions in their house.
Right.
It's been turned into plays that, you know, Rolando has seen, animated film and live action films. And we're going to focus on both of those, some live action films and some animated films.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. The first known version of A Christmas Carol on film was made in 1901. And Rolando, check your chat. We're on a Zoom call. I sent him a YouTube link. I want you to watch this with me really quick in the background because it was made in Britain, in England. Which is really fitting since, you know, Charles Dickens himself was an English writer and it was set there. And this is the first remaining intact copy of A Christmas Story, 1901, called Scrooge.
1901, I had to assume it's a silent film?
It's a silent film.
Okay.
Scrooge or Marley's Ghost. I don't know how long the actual duration of it is, but the clip we see here is about 5 minutes. It's all one shot with a really nice set behind it. And
the set is nice, yes.
So, you know, it tells the story really, really fast.
Oh, look at that.
It has some really creative
some great
camera
special
techniques.
Effects.
Yeah. One of the big things in A Christmas Carol is that he sees Marley's face on his doorknob, and they actually did that where a face popped on to the doorknob.
That's so funny for 1901. All right, we're going to put this in the show notes for sure.
Yeah,
so you guys can
I'm definitely
check it out.
Would love for you guys to see it because it's the first and it's available, and you might as well check it out and see the creativity that was happening in early stages of cinema. So right now, Scrooge is closing his blinds to go to sleep, and pretty soon within his blinds, the ghost of Christmas past will appear. And I think this is really, really creative how this is done. First of all, you know, he's going to sleep on a chair.
I love Ebenezer's.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, right? Yeah. That was great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look, she's translucent.
And she's showing him his past in the doorframe. So he's looking through the window. And now him as a young boy is appearing. And he's reacting very theatrically to it because, you know, this is 1901.
Uh-huh.
Seeing him and Belle, him pursuing her. And
is that
like, who? Oh.
Is that the name of his love?
Yes, Belle? Her name is Belle.
Sometimes they don't even refer to her by a name.
And then she leaves and then he's left there alone. We jump right into
Christmas present. How long was this film?
This is only a couple minutes. It's going to be over soon. I think it's going to be worth for us to watch. You see the children actually look at the camera quite a lot in this scene, which is really adorable.
Yeah, kids probably were like amazed with just like camera technology.
Yeah.
They make terrible actors.
We see the Cratchit family at the table and above them is a sign that says, God bless us, everyone. Tiny this Tim.
It seems like Cosa Christmas Present is the most lackluster.
Yeah. And well, there they are.
They disappeared.
Double exposure. They're on top of the film watching it like they're almost ghosts themselves.
Ebenezer so happy about what's it called? I thought
Bob Ebenezer Cratchit. Yeah, right.
Yeah. He should not look so happy.
What do you mean? Bob Cratchit was happy.
No, Bob Cratchit was happy, but his wife was supposed to be like, it's just like, oh, Scrooge is the worst.
Now this is
unless
my
it's just
absolute
Miss
favorite
version.
That is Miss Piggy's version.
Oh, okay.
Watch this.
No,
this is fantastic.
The plays were like that too, but
that's the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Be, and just points.
That is funny. Actually,
they did the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come as the best way. So that is the earliest surviving version, at least, and I think the earliest version of A Christmas Carol. So it's called Scrooge or Marley's Ghost from 1901. Look it up on YouTube, and it's in our show notes on our website, so please check
that
out.
So funny. First of all, why is the Ghost of Christmas Future just pointing at his, like, he knows he's gonna die. Why is Ebenezer surprised?
Yeah, look at your future here, bam,
just like
right
death.
There
it's just like, all right. We all will die, so
oh no, I'm gonna die. I'm not immortal. Yeah,
that was funny. That was a good watch.
Okay, so there's a couple more versions. You know, the Edison's factory produced one in 1910.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that Thomas Edison had produced one.
Yeah, well, his factory did. There was the first ever feature length version of it. Came out in 1916. Called it The Right to Be Happy.
Did Charles Dickens not give him the rights to the movie?
Maybe, I don't know. I think a lot of them, I think they just wanted to be original, maybe. Who knows? But yeah, there was a bunch of them. And then I think around the 30s is when they started making the sound versions of them.
Or as we call them, talkies.
Yes, talkies. The correct term. We're going to focus, though, on not the first sound version, but I think one of the most well-known ones, and indeed at least one that I have seen, and one that's a little bit worth talking about, 1938's A Christmas Carol that was produced at MGM in America.
Is that the one that's an hour long?
Hour and a half.
Oh, wait, no, then I saw a different one. I don't know which one I saw. I saw one that was on HBO Max. It's like an hour long. It's black and white. Got pretty good effects and stuff. I don't know. I'm not narrowing it down. Let me see.
Yeah, definitely. Tell me which one. Well, actually, the Christmas Carol, then it might be somewhere between an hour and an hour and a half, but I don't think it was under an hour.
It wasn't under an hour. It was like a little bit over an hour, but it wasn't like that long. It was like,
yeah, it wasn't very long. And that's the thing too. The story is not that long.
Starring Reginald Owen.
Yeah, this is it. Oh,
Gene
Lockhart.
Okay, yeah, yeah. It was like, yeah, it's like an hour and change.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I can't recall the exact time of it.
I appreciate a short movie, don't get me wrong.
Well, okay, so then you can discuss this one with me. 1938.
I saw this one just for the podcast.
Yeah, see, I watched a few of them just for this podcast. But so we're talking America, we're talking about America in the 30s, and we're talking about the powerhouse that was MGM. And MGM was a studio that, first of all, was the most, by far, most successful early major studio of the talking era. Louis B. Mayer ran that place with an iron fist, and they were really, really big, unwholesome family content. So it was, you know, no wonder that they were the ones to produce A Christmas Carol. But they took a lot of liberties with the story, in the sense of really exaggerating a certain character for no real reason, in my opinion.
Oh, interesting. What? Who?
Cratchit? His nephew.
Oh, yeah. His nephew was kind of like the first person we see, right?
Yeah, we first see his nephew interacting with the Cratchit children. Yeah,
Right. Yeah, with the Cratchit children, and then just we get a long extended scene with him at the party, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, they all melt together at a certain point, so it's just like,
yeah. It's gonna be.
I do remember. You're right. I do remember that. I was just like, oh, that's interesting. It's starting off with the nephew of all people.
Yeah, and they really also they stretched him and his partner's role in this film. So we see one of the parts in The Ghost of Christmas Present shows that they actually might not marry. And
that's
that
right. Yes.
Their fate might be doomed just like that of Scrooge and his early love, Belle. Mm-hmm. So love is kind of put at the forefront here more than any of the other versions that I've seen, at least. And I think that was just because this was old Hollywood, you know, romance was a big ticket and it was a big seller.
And no one wants to see Scrooge fall in love. So
yeah.
Throw in like the younger, more attractive nephew with just like voila.
Yeah, this movie is missing something snappy. Put in a love story, you know, like it was just kind of old school. And it didn't.
Old school. That's like Hollywood standard right there.
Hollywood standard by far, especially then. And it didn't really add anything to it. But, you know, for an older adaptation, I think this movie is actually really good. I think Reginald Owen as Scrooge is a really good Scrooge.
I think. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think the movie, I just saw it. I saw it yesterday, I think.
Yeah.
And it holds up. It's actually, I was very much surprised at how much I was into this movie. It was breezy. It was like a very breezy watch.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, this is adequate.
Yeah. And you know? Really appreciated their version of The Ghost of Christmas Past, which was just like this very like warming like female presence.
Yes,
Ghosts of right. Christmas Pasts tend to be pretty creepy in most of
these
films.
Oh, that's so funny
films.
That you should say that. They usually are like children, right?
Like most adaptations some of them.
Some.
But yeah, so this was like, I'm always not anticipating seeing whatever is going to be The Ghost of Christmas Past because it's going to be some level of like weird, at least for me. And she is not that. And she's actually like, I feel that it makes sense to have her, The Ghost of Christmas Past, because like I said, she was such a this warming presence that I would want to go with her and for her to show me whatever she has to show me. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So that was one thing I did like about that. And also Tiny Tim, I think he's just got that old movie charm about like an old like 1930s kid charm, and I think that Tiny Tim is also really successful in this one.
I'm not a fan of Tiny Tim any version off the bat. This is my least favorite character of all of them. The God blesses everyone, every time I hear that, just like roll my eyes. I think a little
bit
of my soul
dies. What a place
of
disillusionment, and what
I know,
a place of
right?
privilege
and
you come
it's
from.
It's always
that.
Been since I was a little kid too. Watching it on stage, it's just like God blesses everyone. I'm just like, ugh.
Well, only Rolando would hate something that pure.
Yeah, but I remember in this version, Bob Cratchit gets fired.
Yes, that's right. Very good.
Yeah.
In this version, Bob Cratchit, he throws a snowball or something.
He's with the kids, right? And they're all throwing snowballs. And so he throws a snowball at the next person who's coming around the corner. And it turns out to be Mrs. Scrooge.
Mm.
And Mrs. Scrooge is none too pleased.
Yeah. And then he fires him.
And he fires him on the spot.
Which I think actually was a really smart idea because this is 1938. This is the Depression era.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to like sell this story to an audience and you want them to like care on a level that maybe they hadn't before...
Mm-hmm.
Adding that element, you know, where not only are you poor and you're like pretty much a slave to your boss, but he fucking fires you for the stupidest reason and you have a whole family to feed and a kid who might die and all this stuff.
Yeah,
like
and then even
how
like,
relatable was that to audiences?
Isn't that just, it's just not even a work reason, right? It's
yeah.
like, I'm going to fire you because you threw a snowball at me outside of work hours.
Yeah. So tyrannical.
Yeah.
Which I think though is also... It makes it sadder, you know, that this is just very much a piece of fantasy because in real life, you know, Tiny Tim would have died. Watching this version over more than like any other version, like that kind of like rang true in my head when I watched it.
Why are we led to believe that Tiny Tim does not die in any version of the future?
Ooh, so you think that for one day Scrooge has a change of heart and then the very next day he's back to normal?
No, by no means. I think for the story purposes, I think he does change. But I don't know why Tiny Tim, yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to die regardless.
Well, not if he has good medical help, which they kind of...
Good medical help in the 1800s. Yeah, that's a thing. I forgot.
Do a good old-fashioned bloodletting.
Any medical help.
Or any right, medical fine. Help.
Any medical,
any
help,
medical right? help.
Exactly. So I think
and also like even like anything, like it's like if Cratchit has a better position, more money, the family's doing better, there's less stress, mm-hmm. there's more opportunities for nutrition and food there. And it's
yeah.
So it's all these factors that get that play in Tiny Tim surviving.
Absolutely. So okay, and obviously everyone's gonna die, but maybe just not as immediately.
I mean, he has what, consumption?
We don't know that.
Do we know what he has? Polio?
I'm not. I can't be.
Is it just like
that.
A vague disease that has him like walking with a crutch and like?
I'm unsure.
Okay. No, it could be. It might not be a real thing. Oh, it probably is a real thing. I think it is like probably TB or, which is consumption, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And that makes sense. But yeah.
So many properties we've seen where people die from consumption.
Yeah, that was the thing.
Bly Manor.
Yeah.
I guess that was just a thing in the past, you know?
Yeah, kind of like COVID's a thing right now.
Oh my God. That's what society needs. Like a modern telling of A Christmas Carol. Although I guess we're going to talk about one of them.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. But having said that, I think that, you know, they put that element of Bob Cratchit being fired for kind of a depression era. This is made by the most successful movie studio in the 30s and the 40s and stuff. I was. Well, they kind of were. All of them were. But the depression didn't exist in MGM, right? So, like, who the hell is MGM to make a film up like this that's going to, like, relate to people? I think that's also why the love story between Fred and his fiance Bess is kind of like feels so uneven, because I'm like, okay, you're trying to give something that the public can relate to, but then you're also expanding this unnecessary love story for mm-hmm. you know what reason. It's not like Scrooge goes out and finds his old love and is happily ever after. So True. It's a little bit like of people who of privilege who are trying to connect with like people, you know, the poor, and like they kind of like hit they don't do it right.
Oh, kind of like the lawmakers giving us $600 after a 10-month pandemic. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Right. This is it.
But overall, I do think that this is a good one. And I would say for people who actually can also tolerate older films that they should watch this one. Like you said, breezy.
It's breezy. It's on HBO Max. So if you have HBO Max and you want to see it in high def, it's there.
Yes. So I do want to talk a little bit about one that I know you did not see.
Which one?
It's called Scrooge from 1970.
Oh, that's so funny. This one comes up a lot as like the one of, like, I think this is like a critic favorite of the Christmas Carols, if I remember correctly.
Perhaps it might be.
Or maybe I'm thinking of is there a 1950s one?
Yeah, I think you're thinking of the 1951.
Maybe I'm thinking of
one
the
with Alistair Sim, which I didn't get the chance to watch, but I did hear a film critic who I really like, A.O. Scott, said it was his favorite.
It shows up on a lot of lists as the top Christmas Carol adaptation.
Yeah. Wow, and we didn't watch it. Oh well.
Well, I mean, I watched 1930s movie. Is that not enough for you guys?
Well, this film wasn't, I think the reason we didn't watch it is because it wasn't available and it's Christmas time. I don't got money to spend like on, watching
that's
this.
That's also
so.
True. Yeah.
So Scrooge though, from 1970 is available on YouTube. So this is free to watch. Just a little bit to tell you about it. In 1968, Oliver, the musical, was released as a film. It was on Broadway before that. And it was a big hit. You know Oliver, the musical. Con City Yourself, At Home.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Oliver and Company. No.
Which is another musical based on Charles Dickens' Oliver Twist.
No, I'm not familiar with Oliver.
Well, so Oliver was a musical that came out in the 60s, turned into a film in 1968. And you know that song, Consider Yourself.
No,
I do, Nicole.
Okay.
I do.
Okay.
Part of the family.
Yes, part of the family. It's other songs came from it. It's a very widely popular musical. I think it's kind of waned out of popularity. And it won the Best Picture in 1968, which is probably the worst film that ever won Best Picture, because I mean, that's the year 2001 A Space Odyssey came out and Rosemary's Baby, and you give it to Oliver? Like, really? Anyway. But they were like, let's do another musical version of a Charles Dickens film. So they decided to do A Christmas Carol. And 2 years later, they came out with Scrooge. this stars Albert Finney as Scrooge, and we saw Albert Finney.
Yes. That's right.
One of our earliest episodes of this podcast, we did Murder on the Orient Express, in which Albert Finney got way into character and makeup and everything, and like he pretty much embodied that character. He does the same thing in this film as Ebenezer Scrooge. And this film is worth checking out just to watch, see the makeup and like costume job that they give him and his really in character acting, which is almost as a caricature of what you think Ebenezer Scrooge was. Like, he's almost too theatrical as Scrooge. You know, he's like old and he's got a hunchback and he's like, you know, he's got a face on the whole time. And it's actually kind of fun to watch. Alec Guinness is Marley. It's got pretty much an all-star old school British cast, and it's a musical, and some of the songs are actually not that bad. You sent me a link.
I'll send you a link to talk about after this one, but go
on. Okay. So it's on YouTube. So I actually do want to encourage if you really like musicals, give it a shot. But if you just are a person who, you know, wants to watch a new Christmas movie and wants to watch older films, or you like older films, I will say give this one a watch because it's actually way more enjoyable than I thought it was going to be. My girlfriend and I were actually laughing and taken by surprise by it a lot more than we... And maybe unintentionally laughing.
Okay, yeah, that was going to be my question, right? Like, are you laughing like with the movie or at the movie? It sounds like you're doing a little bit of both.
A little bit of both, yeah.
Okay, got it. All right, that could be fine. I know I'm already preparing everyone, but like, there's a movie here that we were not laughing with or at the movie. I was crying on the inside because like, this is so bad, and I can't wait to discuss it.
Yeah, I can't wait either. But yeah, so I just wanted to give that movie an homage. So that exists. It's available on YouTube. And Albert Finney's portrayal of Scrooge is one worth checking out. So,
what year was it?
1970. Scrooge from 1970.
Oh, perfect. Then we're going in chronological order because the next one that I have seen here is 1971. This is an animated movie. It's The Christmas Carol, 1981. It's the one that stars Alistair Sim. Uh-huh. He's the voice of Scrooge. He returns to portray Scrooge, but this time it's an animated. Ooh. And I just shared with Nicole. I'm going to share this link also because this is available on YouTube. Uh-huh. This link of when Ghost of Christmas Present like lifts up his skirt to show like, I think, famine and disease or whatever those two children are. And this is like the most horrifying thing I've ever seen as a child. It's so horrifying. I'm going to play it so Eddie can watch. Because I think you've seen this one too, Eddie, right?
I've seen this.
Yeah, like this one is, look at him.
And I've seen actually the live version of this too. Which is also
So you've seen the 1930s one. I think it was the 1930s. Look at this. These monsters are so horrible.
These characters in the book as well.
Yeah. I've seen them in, so some of the plays I've seen have also portrayed these two characters, right? Have portrayed the scene where Ghost of Christmas Present this is kind of like his ending, right? Like for some reason Scrooge asks like what he sees like these two hands, right? And he's like, what's under you? What's under there? And he lifts up his, I don't know what you call it. It's like a jacket or something, but
a robe.
Thank
cloak.
You. Yes. And he shows him these two, like one starving child is usually a starving child. And I think the other one is like a sickly looking child. Right. And I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, they are they're famine and they're
disease, pestilence.
Yeah, because, you know, at the time, this is, keep in mind, this is going into the theme of, you know, the Ghost of Christmas Present is showing Scrooge, like, the real shit. Like, it's just like, people don't like you. And also, hey, guess what? Like, lots of people are dying on the street. Because one of the most important lines that Scrooge says is just like, oh, well, you know, my taxes pay for orphanages. They pay for jails. And homeless shelters, right? And, you know, when the guy who's looking through the nation is like, well, most people would rather die than go to these places. Like, they're fine.
Yeah.
Let them die so that way we can reduce the population.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, this is supposed to paint Scrooge in such a really negative light and stuff. But that scene, the one I just shared with you, Nicole, is one of the most horrifying things I remember seeing as a kid. And they always used to scare me. And anytime the plays would do, because some plays omit this part, others don't. Every time a play has this part, it's always creepy.
Yeah,
for this obvious reasons.
It's beautiful animation, like beautiful hand-drawn animation.
Short film, half hour.
Yeah, really nice. Yeah, we'll definitely put that one on the short notes too, and I'm gonna watch that after this.
Produced by Chuck Jones.
Chuck Jones.
It won the Academy Award for best short film.
Oh, nice.
Look at that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and speaking of animated short films, did you ever see Mickey's Christmas Carol?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
From 1983.
I can't believe it's that old.
Yeah, right?
That's what I'm more surprised about. I thought it was a little... I thought it was like more like 90s or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought so, too. And I actually was surprised because I thought I had seen this, but I hadn't. Because I had an old VHS, a Disney one, and, you know, I thought... I remember there being clips from this film in it, but I think I was confused with another Mickey Christmas special, which I actually...
Oh, there is a Mickey Christmas special that's about like the gift of the Magi.
It might be that then.
Yeah, that one is more modern.
Yeah.
But a Mickey's Christmas, yeah, Scrooge plays obviously Scrooge McDuck.
Yep. You know. Scrooge McDuck. Yeah. So actually, I'd never watched like anything like Darkwing Duck or what are some of the other things that like
DuckTales.
I never watched that growing up, so I don't have that same relationship with those characters. Like, I love Donald Duck; he's my favorite Mickey Mouse and company character.
Wait, now I had to look this up. When did DuckTales come out?
Oh, that had to have been the '80s or early '90s.
Yeah, but like the '80s. DuckTales.
But the character Scrooge McDuck has been for a while.
Has he been a while?
Yeah.
Wait, mm-hmm.
Look it up.
I didn't know McDuck. That. So Scrooge McDuck predates DuckTales.
Yes.
Okay.
Like when you see him, you know him.
Scrooge. Yeah.
Let me see.
Actually, he was created in 1947, so he's
Oh, wow. Who, why?
Well, he was based off of Ebenezer Scrooge.
Okay. Interesting. He was based off of it, but
yeah,
they didn't make this The Christmas Carol until 1983.
Yeah, they were like, oh wow, this character who's literally named and based after Scrooge, let's do a Christmas Carol, which they did. He's the granduncle of Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
And I think he's Donald Duck's uncle.
Yes.
Right.
And he's Scottish.
Yes.
Which I think is a really nice element about him, and one that kind of like has him stand out. I love the voice acting. And of Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, Scrooge McDuck is a cool character and stuff.
I mean,
I wonder if, hang on, if I remember correctly, I'm like skimming through it. I don't think Scrooge McDuck goes swimming in a sea of coin, right? As he does in DuckTales. I think that might be created from DuckTales.
Yeah, no, he doesn't do that in this.
I also wonder if like maybe this movie gave him that popularity enough to give him a TV show.
Maybe. Well, that would be surprising because I actually kind of watching it, Scrooge kind of annoyed me, and not only that, but I feel like there wasn't enough of, I know it's animation and I know it's 20 minutes and stuff, but there wasn't enough of a change that I saw within Scrooge McDuck within that time frame.
Scrooge McDuck is always greedy
and he's just so cranky the entire piece.
He is also super cranky.
Yeah, but then it's wait, when you with DuckTales, I'm getting off topic, but with DuckTales it's his relationship with the people around him, like the supporting cast. You know, and how they give him heart. You know, he still has his little greedy, like he's still like, you know, but he you see his how he cares about the people around him.
Yeah.
So that's another element that you get to see of this particular character.
Yeah, I should watch DuckTales to get a better sense of him. I mean, because in this one, I think they're just rushing it all along, and they have characters from other Disney films, like from
Pete
Robin Hood
is,
and Pinocchio.
Ghost of Christmas Future.
Yeah, Jiminy Cricket's there.
Who's Jiminy Cricket? What's he play?
Isn't he the Ghost of Christmas Past?
Oh, he might be. Okay, that makes sense, actually, that he would be the Ghost of Christmas Past. I know
and,
that...
Goofy is Marley, which was like, what?
That's... I personally... I mean, obviously, they give Mickey Mouse the most sympathetic character, which
yes,
is Cratchit.
Bob Cratchit, yeah.
You know? And then is this where they introduce Mickey's little baby Mickey?
I think so, yeah, too. Yeah.
I don't think it's his introduction, but, like, this is a character that you rarely see sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, little Mickey Mouse is just, like, it means that, like, depending on where you see him, that means that, like, both he and Minnie have engaged in premarital sex and had a child. Just saying. I don't think Disney would be happy about this.
Yeah, no, yeah, that somebody should bring this to their attention. Yeah, so with Goofy being Marley, it doesn't really, like, and I don't think it's supposed to. I think they're doing their own version of it, but it doesn't really like things like the greed and the despair that will happen to Ebenezer if he doesn't change. That doesn't really hit, you know, when you have such a likable character playing this. Mm-hmm. But I will say there's a moment towards the end where the ghost of Christmas yet to come kind of shows him what is in store for him, and they imply hell.
Yes.
And that was just like, whoa, this is intense. which is, I think, one of the, I mean, some of them show like, you know, like in Scrooge in 1970, and one of the ones we're going to talk about soon, you know, show like the, like some of the ghosts are fated to have chains around them, and they're like going to be wandering around forever. And that's a terrible sight to see. But I don't remember any of the rest of them showing him that, yeah, you're going to go to hell, you know? And that was, yeah, a bit, I thought, I just wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, which is, I guess it's funny just because...
A rather religious tone for a Disney short to take.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
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 It was okay. This is definitely not one of the best ones, but...
It's a memorable one for me, obviously, because I grew up with it. And yeah. Like, I liked watching anytime it would be on TV. Good question. It's just like, when the hell did you see these, right? Like, how did you see these, right? Because we don't have, when we were growing up, we weren't growing up with, like, the beauty that is on demand or streaming. Like, so it's just, like, you either had to, like, catch these on TV if you were lucky, or, like, if you had cable.
VHS,
like
VHS, maybe.
Or you had the VHS, and my parents never, like, got us VHSs.
No, but you always, I feel like as a kid, so funny, because the thing of, like, how did you, like, get this? Besides a TV guide that would come in, like, either in the newspaper or if your family got the TV guide. But also it was always like announced like coming this Saturday, a Disney special.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there would always be a promotion
for sure. I mean, you know,
for it.
Watching now that I have YouTube TV and I'm watching cable again too, there's always something like Friday night Christmas special tonight is this.
What?
Yeah. Oh my God. First of all, they did The Grinch as a musical, but you know, I recently saw Charlie Brown because PBS was sharing it. They still show Rudolph and Santa Claus, the old Rankin Bass productions from the 60s. Mm. So, you know, Christmas time, they will always. Really?
Yeah. The claymation ones, like the stop animation ones.
They do look a little weird. Yeah.
It's never been my thing. I've never liked those.
I mean, they're not amongst my favorite, but they don't bother me as much. But so yeah, that was another way to do it. But because of those very reasons you said, I hadn't really seen this. I thought I did, but I hadn't until Disney Plus. And I think that, yeah, this is something that when you don't grow up watching, and plus the unfamiliarity that I have with the character, it didn't hit quite as well.
Got it. I have an important update here.
Oh.
All right, here's the important update. The spirit finally reveals to Scrooge two emaciated children, subhuman in appearance and loathsome to behold, clinging to his robe, and names the boy as Ignorance and the girl as Want. The spirit warns Scrooge, beware them both and all of their degree, but most of all, beware this boy, for on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased.
Wow.
Undermining the book's social message. So that's what the kids represent. Ignorance and want. I guess it's like when we turn a blind eye to like the suffering that people do and like greed.
Yes.
Or if, you know, you ignore certain scientists and them saying that either the world is changing its climate or this virus will be out of control. If you believe your own science, whatever that would be, real science.
Yeah, this is true. Where is our liberal version of A Christmas Carol where we could like smack some sense into like some conservatives? That's what the world needs right now more than ever.
I do know a couple people who would benefit from being visited by three ghosts. So,
oh my God, me too. That was going to be my final question of the night.
Three ghosts, your life sucks.
Yeah. Change your heart now.
Change your heart now.
Yeah.
So let's go on.
Which one do you want to talk about next?
The next one that comes to mind that I know that I happen to like was Scrooged.
Yes, that's 1988. Like an 80s movie. Yes,
I don't know if there's anything in between. I know there's a Flintstones Christmas Carol.
Oh, there's probably like a Christmas Carol every year. We're just talking about some of our favorites.
We're just picking some of our favorite ones. Yeah, Scrooge comes to mind for me because I happen to like I was gonna say Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray as he's not Scrooge. I forgot his name already. I think it's Mike or something, or
his character's name in Scrooged, Frank Cross.
I think it's Frank. Frank Cross. That's right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So Frank is a TV exec, right? And he chooses. That's how he makes his fortune, and he's making all these, you know, below the line workers work hard to put out a live version of A Christmas Carol. And he will get visited by three ghosts. My favorite one being Ghosts of Christmas Past, the taxi driver.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's,
yeah,
a good gag. And yeah, it's just it's a fun one. So this is one of the ones you mentioned, love, right? Love is not front and center in most movies.
Mm-hmm.
This one, love is kind of important in this movie because like part of like his redemption arc is like kind of falling back in or winning back the girl who works in the soup kitchen. I forgot her name.
The character's name?
Yeah.
Claire.
Or the love interest. Claire. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, if you remember, anyone who's seen it, Claire, she has a penchant for, you know, working with homeless and stuff. That's, like, her calling and stuff. Part of the reason why they broke up was because he pursued this, like, really heartless career in TV production and stuff, and now he's a TV exec. And the warnings for his future, like, he had told Claire to kind of give that all up and, like, kind of, you know, screw the poor. Like, don't worry about him. And in the Ghost of Christmas, when he goes into the future, like what he sees Claire kind of become like almost a heartless monster herself too, yeah, which is more so important to him, kind of like when she loses kind of that innocence that she is like him trying to like redeem that. It's kind of, I like it. I think it's a sweet story. I don't know. How do you guys feel about it? Did you guys see this movie? What are your thoughts?
So, I hadn't seen this film until this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was just one that I never really thought to watch. And I found some elements pretty interesting. Like, I thought that the Bobcat Goldthwaith character, mm-hmm, who, like, gets fired and then goes insane and tries to kill him, was an interesting element.
It is, yeah.
My favorite thing about it is you're going to update it. I'm glad you friggin' made it a TV executive. Because also, you know, 1988, the 80s were all about greed. And the 80s were all about kind of like Wall Street, suit up, all that, mm-hmm, shit. So it took, mm-hmm, that kind of character that everyone kind of wanted to be in the 80s. And it made it a Scrooge out of him.
Right.
And I think the only person who could do that and make it like somewhat charming would be Bill Murray. I thought he was,
yeah, who was coming,
cast,
who was right off the heels of Ghostbusters fame.
Yeah, Ghostbusters.
You know, like Ghostbusters had just released and he was like, he himself,
well,
was like
4 years earlier, but yeah.
Well, no, but he was still also kind of still struggling with, no, but he was still struggling with the fame from this. We talked about that,
yes,
before, right?
Yes,
like he,
yes,
was still, he was none too pleased with like how kind of famous he kind of became.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a result of Ghostbusters and stuff. So he, yeah, apparently I think they did this movie in 3 months.
Oh, wow. Yes, something they did. Like something. Yeah. I actually don't know too much about the pre-production history or whatnot. And I'm still pretty new to this, but I thought that that element was great and like kind of seeing like an 80s ad, you know, executive kind of being like, oh, wow, none of this is important, especially because like his Marley is like a guy who had a stroke on a golf course. So you see,
right,
like that, like, yeah, that's, oh, that's so true. You know, that is what it would be. The Ghost of Christmas Present freaked me the hell out. Carol Kane as like that weird fairy. That was,
oh, she was funny. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I really, really wanted there to be more with his Cratchit, which was his assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Who was played by a young Alfred Woodard. His Grace.
I don't remember his character that much now.
Her character? His
character.
Assistant.
I'm sorry, yes,
Grace.
Her. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Grace had a child, and that was supposed to be Tiny Tim, and like he wasn't speaking and stuff. So the scene where he goes and he visits Ghost of Christmas Present shows him Grace and her family. I was hoping that would have been... I was hoping for what I was supposed to get out of that whole, like a little bit more, like a little bit more heart and a little bit more like him sympathizing with Grace's character. He doesn't. Like the whole thing at the end is him falling back in love with Claire.
Right. That is what becomes the impetus for this story.
And I thought that from a 2020 perspective, mm-hmm, like I'm not faulting the movie so much as the fact that, you know, I'm from 2020 and I'm looking at this and I'm like, well, isn't it kind of convenient that a white character who has a black assistant, you know, just doesn't actually take responsibility for the fact that like he's not helping her out at all and he doesn't appreciate her at all and her family.
I think that is a very fair and very astute observation for this movie. I haven't maybe seen this movie in like years.
Yeah.
However, yes, you're right. There was elements here that you could like turn the knob a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Kind of make a social... Now, it's hard. You don't want to be preachy, But you could still call these things out.
Mm-hmm.
And they failed. And I think most of that was probably because they were like kind of really focusing on the love story element here.
And I guess maybe they didn't even realize that they had this element there that they just didn't really acknowledge, you know,
because it was the '80s.
It was the '80s, you know, and it was a white dominated market. And I also think that it kind of plays. It's a really good way of looking at, you know, past ignorances.
Mm hmm.
So that, you know, from my 2020 point of view, I was like kind of expecting it to be a little bit more woke than it was, but
no, you know, my stance on that one, if it's out before the year I was born, it probably wasn't.
Yeah. So that was, I guess, the only part that I was somewhat disappointed at, but again, you know, maybe I'm not being kind to the '80s, but this is the year after Wall Street came out where Michael Douglas's character declares that greed is good. So, I do think that it was actually kind of, in a weird way, perfect and ironic of it to have that. And the Tiny Tim aspect didn't hit at all, right? So you kind of like to have that whole, he says it at the end and I'm like, okay, who gives a shit? I enjoy the...
Which is how I usually feel about all Tiny Tim.
Yeah, that's the only one where I... So this is definitely my least favorite. But I did like the whole sing-along of Put a Little Love in Your Heart. Mm. And that was cute, you know? Although I didn't necessarily buy that he was affecting people with like his, you know, infectious Christmas spirit and being live on TV, blabbering like that. But it was still nice to see.
Oh my God.
Although I didn't kind of buy
live
it.
Live on TV speech, right?
Yeah. Only Bill Murray could do that.
It's such a movie trope.
Yeah, it is.
You know? But no, yeah. I mean, I agree with you though. I do, giving that facelift of like kind of like modernizing these characters, I think this really found a successful way of doing that, which I think some more modern adaptations, when you try to like throw these into more contemporary times,
yeah,
they always kind of, you know, fault.
They do.
Yeah. Where they always like kind of suck the most.
Mm-hmm. I would say so. But, you know, there was one, I think you have to keep it in its original setting to really get the meaning of it to really hit home.
I disagree with you. I don't think you do. I actually, so I know I've been joking and stuff about this, but like you could definitely put a Christmas Carol story, you could modernize it, right? And this is going to, I was hoping to save this for the end conversation, but like, we might as well just have it now, which is just like, if you could put someone as the character, not necessarily them playing that role, but like, this is a character that's going to be Scrooge. Who would you put? And this is like a modern person. Like, I think a lot of people would probably say, oh, Donald Trump. No, that's a waste of time. You can't change a monster. I would say it would probably be Mitch McConnell would probably be the character that I would want to have him go through this reformation, right? Like, you throw a Mitch McConnell type character and you give me a script that's just as biting as like a Veep script, like for one of the episodes. Yeah, and I think you have like a success right there, guys. So if any Hollywood producers are out there stealing my ideas, this is gold and you should take it right now.
Yeah, secretly listening. Well, that's the thing too. Like, it could be done. Has it been done? I haven't seen it personally.
No, I agree with you. I have not seen it. I guess it means we say this all the time. It's us who have to create it, obviously.
Yeah, right. Seriously. And we should make this one gay too, because why not?
Oh, yes. Oh my God, that'll be it. Mitch McConnell finds out he's also gay.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
You know what? All right, so we're going to have to change it. It might not be Mitch McConnell. It's going to be Lindsey Graham, allegedly.
Ooh, yes. Well, but I mean, come on.
I'm going to throw that in there so that way they don't sue me.
Did you see Lady Bunny's Christmas special? She goes, "You're a gay man, Lindsey Graham."
Oh, did you see?
It's really, she's just so clever. I love her. But so I haven't seen it, which is why I'm like, Scrooge is the closest thing we have to it. And it did kind of on that level fail, although it succeeded in many others. So the reason why I say too, you got to keep it in 1843 to keep it really, really to have the spirit of what it's supposed to be about alive. Apparently, I also got to add some Muppets to it, because then you'll have the best version that ever existed of A Christmas Carol.
I mean, all right, so I'm going to, right off the boat, say the Muppet Christmas Carol is easily one of my favorite Christmas. It might be my favorite Christmas Carol movie.
It is my favorite Christmas movie. And it is definitely my favorite Christmas Carol movie. I'm partial because I love the Muppets, and I had this VHS growing up, and I have, you know, watched it every, it's my Christmas Eve movie. I watch it every Christmas Eve.
Oh my God, yeah, me and my family too.
Because it's such a perfect Christmas Eve movie.
Yeah, it's like family fun for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You get Michael Caine just hamming it up on camera.
Michael Caine doing the most subtle but effective Scrooge. You know, because he's not like he's not going like he doesn't give himself a hunchback or any facial expressions. You know, he's almost dead face the whole thing. But he like does like certain things that he exaggerates with his Scrooge. And it's really effective. Yeah.
When he's starting to fight those poor rats. And
yeah. He keeps banging and he makes them jump and stuff. It's great. You got Kermit as Bob Cratchit and Miss Piggy as his wife. And you got Robin as the best Tiny Tim. I think the only way that I can take Tiny Tim if it's a Muppet frog. In the form of Robin.
I hate it.
No, I love it. It's so effective for me.
It's never worked, but
and it was actually interesting because I was watching somebody talk about Muppet Christmas Carol recently, and they talked about this one moment that they were like, that it brought a tear to their eye. And that's actually a moment that always brought a tear to my eye too, where at the end, when Michael Caine Scrooge has the spirit of Christmas, and he approaches Beaker, and Bunsen Honeydew, and he's like, I actually would like to donate to the poor. And Beaker is so touched by his change of heart that he offers him his scarf. And Michael Caine just looks at him and he goes, really, you're gonna give me your scarf? I will cherish this. It's such a beautiful moment between a human being and a Muppet that is so effective till this day. It's just like the kind gesture, like, I appreciate what you're doing, have a scarf, you know, like, that's actually so beautiful.
I don't know, I feel like Michael Caine's Scrooge should have been like, okay, well, I have much more finery.
Don't ruin it. This is beautiful.
No, because it's about the intention. It's and he finally understands what it's really about. And that is such a beautiful gesture. Like, thank you for what you did. Here, have my scarf, you know, the clothes off my back, literally.
Oh, okay.
It's also the example of the generosity of those who have less.
Yes. Yes. So
that's true.
It's a wonderful, really effective moment. And
that is the thing I will say about this, about Christmas Carol that keeps coming up, is just like the people with less. Why do we have more heart than the people who have so much?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. That is, and again, Charles Dickens saw this in the 1800s, and somehow, some way, we have now changed. We've gotten worse.
Yeah, we have gotten worse. Because when you have less, you appreciate it more. I would say so. Another really effective thing about, I think, Muppet Christmas Carol is that they put Charles Dickens in the movie via Gonzo.
Yeah, I actually, rewatching this, because me and Eddie rewatched it for the podcast, despite the fact that I'm going to watch it again this week with my family. But no, I agree. I actually think having Charles Dickens in the story, he makes for a good narrator, despite the fact that you don't need a narrator.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And it's like, it's much needed comedic relief because it's a very, very straight story. You know, like, this guy is a miserable old miser and consumed with greed and nothing but, you know, disdain for people. So you need that. You need the breath of fresh air that Gonzo and Rizzo provide.
Yeah. Plus, they made an emphasis of, this is one of the few ones that they emphasize the fact that he's about to evict people on Christmas day. Right. I think all the other versions, I kind of either omit that or really underplay that. But like in this one, it's just like right very early on, you find out he's planning on evicting people on Christmas Day. Yeah. What does he say? He's just like, you know, the super people spend money on Christmas and then we bankers call it, we're ripe for the taking. I don't know what he's saying, but basically saying it's just like, you know,
something
poor
to
dumb
that,
people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor dumb people spend all their money and then we're going to take everything from them when they can't pay us back.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And this version also has two Marleys.
Oh,
which is great.
Which are easily my favorite things in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Marleys are great. We're Marley and
Marley. Ooh. Yeah.
That is the only good song in this movie because
no,
I will complain.
No, that's not true. That is not the only good song
in this
movie.
This movie does not have very memorable music.
Yes, it does.
I've seen this movie like year after year after year. I still don't remember any single
song.
I
remember all of them.
How? They're so unmemorable.
It's like the children singing songs in the choir. It's going home and staying warm by the fire. It's true wherever you find love, it feels like Christmas.
I don't even remember this one.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Marley and Marley, though, I will never forget because it's a good one. When Marley and Marley. Whoa.
No, the opening song of Scrooge is a great song. It's a great, like, sets the stage, you know, and how people
feel. It does
feel
set the stage. Fine. It is great while listening to it, but it's not memorable. I don't remember it.
There goes
hear it in my
Mr.
head.
Humbug. There goes Mr. Grinch. Come on.
And I hear it now.
Kermit's song of, you know, you get a song of Bob Cratchit.
I hate Kermit's song with, like, his son, like, they're walking down the street. I hate it.
One more sleep till Christmas. After all, there's only one more sleep till Christmas. It's such a great Christmas Eve song. And then there's oh God, they're all so good. Bless Us All, the song that they sing for their Christmas dinner with Tiny Tim, is actually such a, if you kind of just listen to the lyrics and you like kind of think about it in terms of like how it can apply to you and what it's supposed to be about for Christmas, it's a beautiful song. You know, like, okay, let us always love each other. Let us run from anger. Let us always be together, and may God bless us. You know, like, it's just such a beautiful sentiment. And
preachy.
I think, shut up. First of all, but you understand why Scrooge is moved, actually, when you have that song and the sentiment behind it, because they have so little and yet they have so much to be thankful for. And yeah, it's, and that's what's, they have each other, you know, they have the things that matter. And that's such a beautiful sentiment. And I think this movie kind of focuses more on that, more that like, it's about having people that you love with you and having like friends too, you know, like when he goes over to his nephew and his nephew's making fun of him because he doesn't like him very much. And he's like, oh yeah, people don't freaking like me.
Oh yeah. So that's interesting, right? I think this is one of the few versions also where like the nephew is kind of mean about Mr. Scrooge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think all the iterations, even the ones that when we see them on the play, it's always the party guests that are kind of making fun of Scrooge, and like he always tries to have it tampered down.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly?
Yeah.
Same thing with like, which is similar to how they did this with Bob Cratchit, right? Where Kermit is telling Miss Piggy, it's like, let's not talk about him this way. Like,
yeah.
He's not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it interesting that like his own nephew was just like, oh, a vermin that you don't want around. Something like that, right? That's how he described it, basically.
Yeah. Oh, Ebenezer Scrooge. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So fucked up. But it's, and then it's also like, you know, Bob Cratchit, you abuse this guy and you take advantage of him and he still won't speak ill of you on Christmas because you give him the roof over his head. Like, you're a piece of shit. You know, like those things just really, really ring true. Mm-hmm. Like, I would look at myself and be like, oh, wow, I'm a piece of shit, you know?
Yeah. But he does.
He does.
He didn't need to go. He actually didn't need to go into the future because Michael Caine does play sympathetic throughout the whole thing.
He does. Yes, he plays. Where
I think
really
the other
great.
Ones get like upset and stuff, but like he, you, I don't know. Michael Caine does like he shows that you feel it and stuff.
100%.
I will say, my complaint here also is how creepy the Ghost of Christmas
Past is. So creepy,
so scary. Eddie was rewatching too. He's like, wow, was she always as scary? I was like, yes, Eddie.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Always as scary.
I grew up watching this movie, so I'm like, well, this little girl child is dragging me, like she doesn't have legs, what's going on, weird. No.
There's a lot of design elements there that are creepy. The face.
Yeah, the face. Yeah. Hi, I'm the Ghost of Christmas Past, you know,
that might
like
be
that.
Just a cover of our podcast.
Yeah, episode. Just her face.
Her face.
People I do think.
Like, what is this horror?
But I think, I guess, ghosts aren't supposed to be, other than the Ghost of Christmas Present, they're not supposed to be that warm and inviting, I guess.
Is she warm and inviting? That's like...
No, she's not. That's well, that's what I'm saying. I guess they're supposed to not be that way. The Ghost of Christmas Past and Yet to Come are not very inviting.
No, no, no.
In most
Ghost
iteration.
Of Christmas Present is jolly.
I yeah. Guess. He's always this really tall, Saint Nick-looking guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically.
And yeah,
this one has the power to like spread Christmas cheer
100%. And props to Michael Caine for acting as well as he did, you know, surrounded by a bunch of Muppets. I mean, those conditions alone, you know, it's got to be hard to act like that, and he just sold it. He's definitely my favorite Scrooge.
This is easily my favorite Christmas Carol. It's fun. It holds up, right?
It does
hold
up. I
feel like
up.
Sometimes that's a question. It's just like, all right, is it just nostalgia or does it actually hold up? And this one does hold
up.
Yeah,
100%.
Like, you could talk to anyone who has seen it and they'll say, it's just like, oh no, I'm rewatching with my kids and I still love it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So
it's not my classic. Favorite Muppet Christmas themed thing, but it's
what?
Probably my second.
Are there more?
Oh, yeah, there are.
Oh, I can't.
There's
I'm not
so
as,
much.
I'm not so versed with the Muppets.
I could start a Muppet podcast. I'm obsessed.
You should.
Ooh, do you guys want it? Let me know.
Pod pits. The Muppods? Muppods.
Well, okay, we'll work on that later. But I mean, enough ranting about just how much I love Muppet Christmas Carol. I guess there is one more for us to discuss.
I'm trying to think. I wish Eddie was here. Are we going to discuss the Netflix one?
The Jim Carrey one?
Oh, I thought we were going to discuss...
No. I wish Eddie was here for that. But I guess we should talk a little bit about the Jim Carrey, Robert Zemeckis one.
I've never seen that one.
Yeah, so I never really seen it either. Because I saw the Polar Express. And that, you know, the animation style in that just didn't really do it for me. So I didn't want to watch Christmas Carol.
It's the Uncanny Valley for you, isn't it?
Yeah, something... And also, you know, Polar Express is just slightly boring and whatnot.
I mean, I never saw the movie fully, The Polar Express, but I, because my dad had rented it and he wanted to watch it, and I fell asleep like halfway through. It's so boring. I mean, it's a movie about a train. Like, how exciting could that be?
The book itself is like 20 pages, so like they turned that into a 2-hour movie somehow. But the song that they use in it is very nice. The Children Laugh or whatever that song is. That's a nice song.
I've never heard this song ever.
It's called Believe. Josh Groban sings it.
Oh. Yeah, actually, you did have some Josh Groban undertones in your delivery.
Thank you.
I should have picked up on that.
I did a good Josh Groban. I like that.
He has like a vibrato there, like when he sings.
Yes, you know? He does. Yes, he does. Yeah. So that was why I didn't want to watch this. And, you know, it's on Disney Plus and I gave a little bit of a shot. I didn't finish it because, you know, the reasons that I didn't want to watch it, you know, were the reasons I didn't finish it.
Was Jim Carrey the voice of Scrooge?
So Jim Carrey was not only Scrooge, he was all of the ghosts.
Oh, that's interesting. Does he have the range, darling? That's the biggest question.
He does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And he's not a bad Scrooge. And it's a pretty faithful adaptation, although there's just something, I don't know, there's something about this style that Robert Zemeckis did when he did Polar Express, Beowulf, and Christmas Carol that it's really kind of cold feeling. There's like this harshness to it, and you can't really warm up to the film as a whole, at least for me.
I agree with you. I actually don't like Beowulf that much. However, there is something about his, I respect him for, he's trying to capture life in something that's lifeless, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
It's like, in his own way, he is creating like his own art form that I do respect, despite the fact that I don't like it.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just like, it's his own thing. I mean, I don't know he needs to go back to like mixing live action with animation and get me like a Roger Rabbit Part 2. That's what Robert Zemeckis needs to do.
Oh my gosh, no, that wouldn't be any good though.
Oh, well, if they go the traditional route,
well, they'll never do again, because why would they? But
and Warner Brothers would not license characters, I feel like, to Disney.
Yeah,
at this point
true.
In time,
that's
right?
True.
Disney's so too powerful, right?
Yes. But I will say too that this, for an animation film, is also really true to the book. It has ignorance and want in it. It also has his sister Fan in it. Who is his nephew's sister and who was his only family member in his life that cared about him.
Does she die? She dies. But she dies during childbirth?
Well, she died as an adult. So maybe she died giving childbirth. But because he spends all of these movies, he always spends Christmas at his boarding school. He doesn't go home with his family. So his family is not very kind to him. So why should he show kindness? He wasn't shown kindness.
Wait.
But Fan was.
I don't know. Is... being sent off to boarding school, I know that we can take that as a sign of like, oh, that's mean, but
well, I mean, if all of your really other classmates are going home for the holidays and you're not, that kind of seems like,
I mean, he made it seem like he didn't want to.
Well, yeah, because he's proud, and that's one thing that Ebenezer Scrooge is.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I feel like different interpretations, like some have
made
him.
Definitely.
Like,
I would say that this is what got him to be who he is, you know, and if you were deprived of love and affection at an early age, then you'd probably turn into a Scrooge too.
Right.
So, but I never finished it. Tour de force performance by Jim Carrey, but just not a fan of that animation style. And that's one of the more memorable recent versions of A Christmas Carol.
Right. That's an actual Christmas Carol by name.
Yes.
Because 2020 did bless us, some might say. Not many, but some. Definitely, apparently, one out of two of us here. Right. But apparently, bless us with Dolly Parton's rendition of A Christmas Carol called Christmas in the Square.
Christmas in the Square. Dolly Parton.
And go. Before I go on my rant, tell me, Nicole, what did you think of this movie?
Well, so Rolando prefaced me with this film and was like, oh, this is a career ender. So naturally, I had to watch it. And I watched the whole thing. And I mean, oh my gosh, it's such a beautiful blend of terrible and yet so bad it's good. It was directed actually by a very well-known dancer who, I guess, I forgot her name, Debbie Allen. It was directed by Debbie Allen, who's a very mm-hmm. well-known choreographer. But, you know, that doesn't always translate to director for film. So it was kind of directed like a community theater production.
Yes, I agree with you there. It did have that community theater feel.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, like it was very much clearly a set and all this stuff. And it was, oh boy, was it cheesy and was it just, you know, it was terrible. And Dolly Parton as a homeless person in her wonderful furs.
Her wonderful furs, her face was beat to death.
Yeah.
She was always glowing.
With like just like a little thing of black makeup on her to make her look poor, you know. But like I respect Dolly Parton because she's like, you're gonna make me look like the most fabulous homeless person there ever was.
Oh, I know. That was clearly a stipulation, like in this production, right? That
yeah.
I don't know how involved she was because I know she
wrote
that
the
Netflix
music
contract.
Rolando, she wrote the music.
So here's the other thing, right? I love me some Dolly Parton, but the music in this movie is so. She didn't put any effort into
phoned
it.
In. So
she
phoned
just really
in.
Just like I'm. This rhymes, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And but there are so much music. I love musicals. I love musicals. But I, you know, like I guess if you're gonna sing, usually in a musical, there's people sing when there's like too much emotion and it builds up, or it's like, oh, and this is an important part in the story, so there should be a song here. These people just kind of sing just to sing.
They just sing, yeah. This is the world they live in. They're singing in the town hall meeting where it's just like, we are all getting evicted from town. What do we do? We're just going to sing our evil plots.
So what's the Christmas Carol plot line here? Is that Christine Baranski is a banker. It's kind of like It's a Wonderful Life-ish too. She's like a banker and her father started this town many years ago, but now he's deceased and now it's her town and she decided that she's going to sell it. How big is this town? She's going to sell it to some millionaire so he could build a mall there.
Which also means, like, how big is this mall need to be?
Yeah, seriously, in the middle of Kansas?
So many questions. Yeah, the other thing, right? They want to make, like, the next biggest mall in America in Kansas. Yeah. Like, who is this? Who has the money for this in Kansas?
Seriously. So the character of Regina, played by Christine Baranski, is the Scrooge. And everyone in town, you know, doesn't want this to happen. But she's like, well, it's going to happen by Christmas Eve in 2 days.
Right, which is the other thing, right? It's just like, why... Like, give them at least until New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
what
seriously.
Is the objective date of waiting until Christmas Eve?
Yeah.
Because she knew the town loved Christmas Eve. That is why.
Yeah, it was weird.
This movie was free. All right. So, yeah, I recommended this to Nicole because we had discussed we're going to do Christmas Carols as a podcast.
Yeah.
And Eddie had put this on when we were making pasteles with his mom. In the background, right? Ooh. So for those of you guys who don't know, pasteles are like kind of like Caribbean versions of tamales.
So good.
And so we're making them. And she wanted to put something Christmassy on in the background. So Eddie was just like, oh, this movie with Dolly Parton. This at worst, it'll be like entertaining, but like, you know, like kind of fun. No, I disagree. I was just like, this is awful. Like, this is just not a good movie. The pastor and his wife just had no chemistry whatsoever.
No chemistry. She was always like, smiling.
Oh my god.
The child who worked at the bar, that was just really out of place and didn't play as it was supposed to. I'm like, is this supposed to be endearing? Are they supposed to be building a cute little relationship here?
The only saving grace for me actually was probably Jennifer Lewis.
Yes, yes, as the
Jennifer Lewis
the hair
might
salon.
Have been the only. Yes, yeah. She was a best friend, and she was the only one who had like actual. I felt like she gave her because even I feel like Christine Baranski must have realized like halfway through the production, just like, oh no,
yeah, I
oh,
think so
no.
too. But she kept her chin up and she did a good job, and she's a really good actress. I don't agree with you that this is going to be a career ender for her because she's done.
I guess she has
all
a good wife
stuff.
Still going on. Yeah. So. The good fight. I'm sorry. The good fight.
But CBS yeah, I mean, actors. So also, this isn't as much of a Christmas Carol. It's more so like Dolly Parton's an angel who is showing her that she's, you know, being a greedy bitch and shows her a little bit more of the past. Doesn't necessarily show her the present or future.
Oh, really? Okay, so then actually, I stopped watching this. Like,
yes, I should tell you that.
I stopped watching this because I got to the part where Dolly Parton comes for the first visit, mm-hmm. and I assumed it's just like, oh, this must be, this is the Bob Cratchit moment. And it was just so, it was lame. That's the only word. Like, the dialogue was so bad. I was just like, well, I've had enough of this.
Yeah.
And
the songs are not catchy at all. They're so derivative. I mean, the only one that I kind of remember is The Wickedest Witch of the Middle. But that, even there, was like a really odd scene. It just felt so much like a staged production on that was being captured. Like, you could almost see the camera set up. You know, we'll put a camera back here for the wide.
Oh, yeah.
And a camera here for some close-ups. And then you see the editing of it all, and you're just like, ay.
And you also see sometimes, like, when they're in cars, like, you can see the people in the background moving it.
Yeah. Yes.
You know what I mean? So this movie is a train wreck. And, like, I was complaining about, like, how do you modernize A Christmas Carol? And, like,
and
you know,
this is not how you do it. This is not how you do it. I will tell you, you missed, though, is that Regina, in her past, the reason why she's so embittered towards the town is because she loved that guy who owned that antique store. And yes. But at a dance, she got, like, jealous because he thought he was macking it to some other girl. So she hooked up with another guy who ended up getting her pregnant.
Oh.
And then she had a baby born out of wedlock, which her father insisted that she keep secret and then give up the baby.
Was
and so she
one of
always
the family members.
So she always one hated the town because she was like, "You guys wouldn't have accepted me with the baby." And it turns out that that baby grew up to be the pastor.
Of course, it became the pastor.
Mm-hmm. And oh, in goodness. The end, it's a very religious, you know, theme where, like, she finds kind of like God Christ. And stuff. And yeah,
is Dolly Parton religious?
I mean, she's a Southern country figure. She's kind of got to be.
Well, all right, fine. Maybe she is. All right, how about this? I could believe that she might be spiritual.
Yeah.
But maybe not. I don't know if I would consider her like a devout, not a devout Catholic, not with her attire.
Yeah. No.
I mean, I might be mistaken. I don't know. I can't speak to her thing.
I mean, this is, I think anyone.
I think she's openly admitted to talking about cheating on her husband so much.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the rules for being a Christian have changed.
I suppose.
Yeah.
And Dolly Parton paved the way.
If this was anyone else but Dolly Parton, this film would have been unwatchable. But the fact that it had Dolly, I think, made it kind of like you couldn't look away.
I will say Dolly Parton might be the only thing I kept watching because she's like, why is she a homeless person? Why is her face like that?
Why does she look wonderful?
Yeah. One of those modern retellings. There is one movie that we forgot to talk about.
Which one?
That is a modern retelling of A Christmas Carol.
What, Ghosts of Girlfriend's Past?
Oh, how did you know? Yes, Ghosts of Girlfriend's Past.
Is that a Christmas movie or is that just
is a Christmas... No, it's A Christmas Carol, basically.
Oh, I never saw that.
It is A Christmas Carol, but, like, it is Matthew McConaughey getting visited by three women. So I think a lot of it is, if I remember correctly, like, a lot of it focuses on the past, right? Like, the girlfriend's past. But, like, you know, he does see the present. He does see the future. I think the future is, like, him, whether or not he's going to end up with, Jennifer Garner? Yes.
I remember Jennifer Garner in the commercial.
And it's based, so Jennifer Garner's character is actually based off of Belle.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Indeed.
So I never saw it. Michael is Douglas. It any good?
No.
No,
it's,
okay.
It's not. I wouldn't recommend it. But it is a modern retelling. I don't think it's successful. He's a photographer.
Mm.
That's like kind of, so like he's a womanizer. So instead of like him being a greedy, he's more about lust. And that's kind of how they changed it up a little. And that element I kind of appreciated a little.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like, there are six other cardinal sins other than greed. Like, ooh, great. Let's focus on one, lust. I think they play it up too much for laughs. And, like, the women are kind of, I don't know. I think you've never seen it?
I've never seen it.
You can obviously believe that they're, like, kind of flat. Like, they're not, like, very, very well-developed characters. Because it's just about him womanizing, right? It's almost like if you were watching a 2.5 Men movie.
Oh, jeez. Oh, God. Yeah. I can't even think about watching that, so.
Written by, who directed it? Mark Waters. Does that name sound familiar to you?
Not off the top of my head.
No? Yeah, same. But, you know, that one is a modern retelling that I do remember. But it's not, I don't know, it's not memorable. I don't think, like, if you look at lists of Christmas movies that everyone must watch, I don't think this one ranks.
Yeah, no, not at
has
all.
Has ever ranked, so.
I am waiting, because obviously we're going to keep getting more and more Christmas carols. We could probably do a whole other episode on them. But I am waiting kind of like for that one that kind of hits true to a 2020, well, now 2021 viewpoint. And it's a little, you know, talking about it now, the ones that were most effective for me are the ones that take place in 1843. You know, there's two. The Dolly Parton one just did not work at all. Scrooge kind of missed some marks there. So, and, you know, Rolando talked about one that he would like to see that we can relate to in this day and age. And I, you know, if anybody's listening, I really think that that's something we kind of even need. Would you say that we need that, Rolando?
All right. So I think A Christmas Carol, the reason we get so many iterations of this is because nothing has changed, right? And yep. I'm going to keep stressing this out. I think the disparity between the rich and not even the poor, right? Because that's already gigantic as it is. The rich and the middle class is so huge that we're constantly putting out these stories,
yeah,
that are, what's it called, that make us want to believe that the rich can change. However, I think now that more and more, as I'm rewatching these, that might be a disservice to us, because I don't think the truth is, like, I don't think they will change.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either.
You know, and
I don't know if I want to watch a film that it happens in and then go back to my life and be like, oh wow, yeah, it was just fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. I do believe, and this is why I brought up a ghost of Girlfriend's Past, right? Exploring. You could take the same structure for this story, right? Which is greed. Greed is like the main culprit here.
Yeah.
You could change it and you could change it to one of the different cardinal sins, right? And they're greed, pride, gluttony. Gluttony would be a great
gluttony,
one.
You get like sloth, yeah.
You get like an that could be like a woman with weight issues, or even a guy with weight issues and stuff. He loves to eat and stuff, and like it's about what made him like need this.
No, this is gonna be put away.
This sounds like problematic. All right.
What about envy?
You could set it on Broadway, right? And it's almost like Black Swanish.
Okay.
But like written more about envy.
Okay.
Here, I'm just throwing these pitches out here. Hollywood, man.
Yeah.
I'm the idea man.
There would definitely be a bunch of really nice ways that we could see this change, because as a person who's seen so many versions of this too, yeah, all it's going to do is make me just like look at another fantasy version of it. And it's going to make me upset at my own reality and the reality of the world. So might as well just take it in a brand new direction. So at least we can have something to be excited about again.
I already know how to. All right. Yeah. So for Envy, it'd be a Broadway actress. She's getting aged out. There's a new ingenue that she's super jealous of. And she's like going to do something horrible to her, like maybe go Tanya Harding, right? Like break some kneecaps.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, though, she gets visited by these ghosts and it's just like, where does this envy come from? And then she sees Ghosts of Christmas Presents, where like all the people who work with her call her out for what a monster she is. And then Ghosts of Christmas Future is like she's a washed up actress or like dad or whatever off of drug overdose. Who knows? And now she has to see the error of her ways, which is her jealousy has kind of made her this monster that she is. See, I just gave you guys a script, people.
Why are you giving them scripts? You write it and then send it out.
Oh, because writing scripts is so hard.
I know. It's such a process.
Just pay me for the ideas, guys. Yeah. And then, I don't even need like a big paycheck. I'll take a small cut and give the screenwriter who does the actual hard work like the
it's not
majority
a,
of
not
money.
A bad script, honestly. That was
thank you.
I enjoyed that.
Thank you. and then what we need truly in 2021 is a LGBTQ inclusive version of this story.
Yes.
I think this season we have seen, like this 2020, we've seen a lot of LGBTQ Christmas movies.
Mm-hmm.
A LGBTQ slant on A Christmas Carol might be the facelift it needs. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
I think so, too. I mean, we have Carol, but that's not enough.
Not a Christmas Carol, though.
Yeah, no, like the movie Carol, which is kind of a Christmas movie. But it's not a Christmas Carol, but yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that joke landed as well as it should have.
It did. Okay, it took me a second.
But yeah, so I mean, having covered all of the versions that we did, no more of the same old, out with the old and in with the new, we say.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, don't want to do a lightning round of Scrooges?
I feel like based off of how, oh yeah, sure. That's
you already know what my favorite is. You know Michael Caine is my Scrooge.
Okay, I might surprise you then.
Who's yours?
It's going to be the 1930s guy.
Yeah, Reginald Owen,
I thought he was good. I liked him a lot. I thought he kind of fit that mold of what all future Scrooges are kind of more or less based around of off of.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
And I appreciate it. I think it was a good performance. And I think it surprised me that it's from the 1930s.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it holds up really well from 1938. So.
Mm-hmm.
But the best Tiny Tim is also from A Muppet Christmas Carol. So.
The best Tiny Tim is no Tiny Tim, but that's just me.
Well, on that note, Merry Christmas, guys. We hope that Merry you Christmas. Enjoyed revisiting all these Christmas carols with us. Hope you got inspired to watch some that you might not have seen. And if you have any opinions that you either agreed or disagreed with us on, please, you know, email us or reach out to us to our social media and let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, we would, especially as the year around comes to an end.
Yes.
We want to hear from you. So email us. You know our email, remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. Facebook, Instagram, you can find us, Remakes Reboots Revivals.
Happy holidays. And
happy holidays.
We will see you in 2021.
Goodbye, 2020. It's not been fun.
Not at all. Good riddance.
All right, everyone. So until next time,
stay unoriginal.